This podcast does not constitute medical advice. All changes surrounding medications, diet, and exercise should be made in consultation with a professional who can assess your unique health circumstances.
Welcome to the Pattison Program, where you'll learn how to improve your health from the inside out. And now, your host, Clint Pattison.
Thanks for joining me today. We've got Sean on this episode. We're going to talk about rheumatoid arthritis. Sean is currently pain-free and drug-free, and we've got a great story ahead of us. G'day, Sean.
G'day, Clint. How are you?
I'm great, mate. Thanks for doing this over Skype. I know we only live a couple of hours away, but this enables us to use the technology to get this out to people and so they can access it in a few different ways.
Yep, sounds good.
Now, mate, we haven't talked a lot before this call. In fact, you've only just given me probably a 30-second summary of where you're at. So I'm looking forward to hearing this all for the very first time. Why don't you take us back to when you first got diagnosed with RA or potentially even earlier, if you had any health conditions that may have predated the diagnosis?
Yeah, probably just listening to your podcast and reading your story, I sort of be able to, you know, put pieces of the puzzle together. Thinking back, probably 15 years ago, I got diagnosed with gout in my feet. And I saw the doctor, and he said, "Yeah, you've got gout." And he said to me, "Are you a boozer?" And I thought, "Well, if drinking a bottle a week's a boozer, well, I'm a boozer."
And have to be a big bottle, right?
Oh, yeah, it has to be a big bottle. Yeah,
50-liter bottle. Right.
So his diagnosis was, take the Voltarens, the anti-inflammatories. Yeah. And see how you go with them. So of course, went to the chemist and got the Voltarens, and sure enough, fixed the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. But how long did you take those before you found their effectiveness didn't work, or you had stomach troubles, or did you take them for a long period?
Yes, I think I did probably not consistently. Only when I had flare ups in my feet.
Yeah,
I'd take them, but I would take one, and it would sort of it would solve the problem.
Right. Yep. And how long did you have the gout for? Was it an ongoing thing? Because you said 15 years ago you started to get it. I mean, give us an overview of how that sort of proceeded to develop over the years.
Yeah, it was very sort of, off and on, like not consistent. And then probably later on, probably getting into maybe 2010, 2011, where I was probably feeling it in my knees.
Right.
And then probably getting to 2012, I saw a doctor, and he actually did a blood test on me, and my wife was with me. And he said, "You've got RA." And we sort of looked at him, and he said, my wife said, well, because it was all new to us then.
Yeah.
And my wife said, "Well, what can you do about that?" And he sort of looked us in the face, and he said, "Oh, well, do you want to go on chemotherapy?"
Just like that.
Yeah, just like, "Do you want to go on chemotherapy?" And we were, of course, you relate chemo to, cancer. And well, I looked at him and said, "No." And he said, "Well, that's your only option." And that was where it was left at.
Right.
That was it. And it was the same thing, the anti-inflammatories.
Right. Well, that's actually, I'll just add something to that. When I give my talks now, whenever I get to my first conversation with the rheumatologist, I say that this is exactly what you sort of is talking about. He said, "Well, the first option for you is going to be methotrexate." He said, "It's a cancer drug. It's very toxic for your liver, so you're going to need to have blood tests every month because the liver can really find it difficult to tolerate. It's going to create a lot of toxicity throughout your body, so you won't be able to have kids." And he said, "It's going to create an enormous amount of fatigue, so you're going to be exhausted all the time." And he said, "When would you like to start?" And I said, "Well, although that does sound very attractive, I want to think about it for a while." So it sounds like we had the exact same sort of situation. It's like, "Hey, you going? So let's get on this chemo stuff immediately."
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So what happened then? So up until this point, I'm creating this picture that you've had this this pain that's coming and going from your feet for a good period of 10 years. Your knees are starting to hurt a bit. You've gone to the rheumatologist. He said you've got rheumatoid. Now, did he run blood tests on you, or did he just look at your joints?
No, so he's done the blood test, and he must have done the rheumatoid factor, and he's seen it in the blood. And that's where we left him. That was it. He sort of, well, I don't want to go on chemo drugs. Yeah. So we left it. And then it was sometime after that, it was probably getting into 2013, like just one morning, I just woke up in agony in my groin, like I was in pain. And my wife said, look, we've got to do something about this. Like you can't leave it. Something's wrong. So let's see another doctor. So yeah, I saw another local doctor, and he did the same thing. He did some more blood tests. He looked at me and he said, you've got rheumatoid arthritis. You need to do something about it.
Yeah.
We need to get you to a rheumatologist.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I was in agony.
Yeah. And so the other doctor, was he sort of surprised that that it had been, a year or so since another doctor had told you that and that you hadn't taken any action? Was he surprised that you were kind of just doing your own thing or without any of the heavy meds?
He was in the same practice, like he was in the same building as the other doctor. So we booked in to see a rheumatologist at Westmead. Okay. Of course, you know what they're like. They're hard to get into.
Yeah.
I was in a lot of pain.
Yep.
He actually made some phone calls and got me in, you know, early.
Mm-hmm.
And he saw me and he said, same thing. He looked at me and he said, well, you've got this for life.
Yep.
You're going to be on drugs for the rest of your life. And to me, it was it really hit home hard.
Mm.
It was like giving you a cancer diagnosis, I suppose.
Yeah, for sure.
He said, we have to hit this hard and fast to, you know, stop the progress of it. And of course, he put me on, he started me on the methotrexate. He said, this was probably the best drug to start on, has the most success. And he started me on as well, I think, a dose of sulfasalazine.
Okay.
Yeah, and I was going back to him monthly.
Yep.
Doing the regular blood tests. Yeah, went back in to see him, still got pain. And, of course, went through the progress with him of keep on upping. So he upped the methotrexate, he upped the sulfasalazine, and then he introduced the Plaquenil.
Okay. So how long was it after you went to that Westmead rheumatologist until you were at sort of the level that you're now at in your story? Was it about a year that you were like, then you're at high doses of methotrexate and sulfasalazine, and then you're about a year?
Yeah, so, about a year. I got to the 25 milligrams of methotrexate.
Mm-hmm.
He said, your body seems to tolerate it pretty well.
Yep.
I was on four tablets a day of the sulfasalazine, two in the morning, two at night, and I was eventually on the Plaquenil, same thing, about two tablets a day.
Okay. Interesting parallel again with me. I was put originally on 10 milligram of methotrexate, and then I went to another rheumatologist for a second opinion thinking that there's got to be a better answer, but her answer was actually more aggressive and that I was kidding myself being on 10, and the doctor was just bending the rules just to sort of make me feel a little bit happier that my drugs weren't too bad. And so she said you should be immediately up to 20 milligram of methotrexate. So I went back to my other rheumatologist sort of with my tail between my legs, realizing that, you know, there's sort of nowhere else to go. He was doing a wonderful job, as it turns out. But the methotrexate, which originally helped me reduce at least 50% of my pain in the first couple of months, I found that it wasn't holding my disease and that I, like you, had to increasing the medications until I got to the maximum dose tablet form in Australia, which is the 25 milligram, just as you were on. I wasn't on those other meds, but I was on only the methotrexate. So, okay, well, it sounds like there was a big change about to happen because, you know, I'm looking for this sort of the big turning point. So what was the big turning point, or did things get more toxic for you before there was a turning point?
Eventually, I think when I was on that dose, I was pain-free.
Okay.
Things were good. He spread the methotrexate. I would take it during the week, but I found that I had a real downer. Like I felt I hit a low when I used to take it, and of course working during the week. So I spoke to him about that, and he says, well, maybe take it on a Friday evening. So I took the full dose on the Friday evening. And of course, you know, that ruined the Saturday morning. You just didn't feel like getting up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a real slow start to the day.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah. And how was your liver doing with it? With your monthly blood tests, did you ever have to review that medication, or were you always okay from a liver point of view?
Yeah, from a liver point of view, he said I seem to tolerate the drug fairly well.
Okay. And so at that point, you're basically the perfect patient. Your rheumatologist has found the ideal medications for you. You're not getting side effects that they consider to be too severe to take you off the drugs, and you're pain-free. So from a rheumatologist's point of view, they would be clapping their hands and saying, you're in remission. This is perfect. So what changed? What happened after that?
Okay, so probably in late 2014, we went on a cruise.
Uh-huh. Yes, I know where this is going. Yeah.
Okay. So
I used to work on cruise ships as a comedian, yeah.
Yeah, and that same thing. I'm listening to your stories. So we went to New Zealand on a cruise. We did both islands, and so we sailed down to the south.
Gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah,
and of course we all know what happens on cruise ships. Cooked breakfast every morning.
the booze is back. Yeah, all the food you can eat.
Yeah, all the food you can eat. Bottle of wine every night. Hey, still feeling good. Walking around, no pain. Also, the rheumatologist, he said, get rid of the Voltarens. He put me on the Naprosyn. He said, look, only take them when I really have to. So if I was in pain, look, like take them as an emergency.
Yeah, and I'm wondering why. What was his rationale? Was it to do with the gut?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'd say so, but he sort of said, look, only take them when you have to. Don't take them regularly.
Yeah, I know it's a good advice to take them as sparingly as you need to. I just wondered why he wanted you to swap from that brand to the other. But doesn't matter. Yep, keep going.
And then we got to this street. I think it's a bit like your cherry moment. I call it my Baldwin Street moment.
Baldwin Street, okay.
So in the South Island, I think it's around Dunedin.
Mm-hmm.
There's this, it's the steepest street in the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh, right, yeah.
You walk up this street, and, of course, when you walk down the street, you get a certificate when you get at the bottom. So my wife said, would you be right walking up this street? So I said, oh, yeah, no problems. I can walk up this street. So walked up the street, and I got about halfway, and I said, I'm starting to feel pain in my knees.
Oh, my God, yeah.
And, then we walked down and I got to the bottom and I could feel the pain. I said, oh, look, I shouldn't have done this walk.
Okay.
So I got back on the cruise, and from then on, so it was a two-week cruise. That was the end of it for me. So I thought, oh, well, I had the Naprosyns, so I started taking the Naprosyns. No result, absolutely nothing. Then it was, of course, on the cruise, they have the people doing the acupuncture.
Oh, yeah.
My wife said, look, why don't you give it a go? So I did the acupuncture, and she said to me, oh, how do you feel, relaxed and all that? And I said, no. I was just tension. Like I just said, it's not for me.
Yeah, when you're not well on a cruise ship, it's one of the most claustrophobic, most terrible feelings that you can have, because you can't get off. There's no way that you can seek quality medical care. You can't do anything. You're stuck out on those ships. And that was one of the reasons why I loathed them. I would nearly break down in tears having to leave my wife to go on one of these cruise ships, because I just felt so exposed to the food and so underprotected if I needed some kind of help. It's just not a comforting place to be when you're in pain.
No.
Okay. So did you get off the ship? I know that I've had experiences where some fellow passengers on the ship have had to be flown back through various unrelated matters, had to be flown back to their home and all sorts of stuff. I've seen helicopters arrive, yeah, all sorts of stuff. But did you just stay on the ship until the end of its natural length?
Yeah, so I stayed on the ship, yeah. I sort of managed to hobble around.
Yeah.
Yeah, so got back home, and the other GP, he'd gone back to the UK. So I went to another practice and saw another doctor, and he sent me for X-rays, and you know, and he sort of gave me another variation of the naprosyn, a different dosage.
So this was is a GP.
Yeah, just a GP, yeah. And he sort of said to me after the X-rays, he looked at the X-rays, he said, "Gee," he says, "there's nothing I can do for you." I think I did about two visits back to him, you know, within a few weeks. Now, we're getting fairly close to Christmas at this stage.
Yeah.
He says, "You're going to have to go back to your rheumatologist." So he wrote a referral, you know, and said, "Look, go and see him." And I thought, I come back home and said to my wife, "Look, I'm not going to be able to see. It's Christmas. I know how hard it is to see him." And I thought, I'm not going to be able to get into see him.
Right.
And she says, "Well, what are we going to do?"
Right.
So I was just in agony. And, of course, you know, I was sitting around and I searched the web.
Yeah, and, as we do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's when I come across your program. I came across it in another website. Is it Health Unlocked or something?
Health Unlocked has a lot of threads about us. Because obviously a lot of people have rheumatoid arthritis on Health Unlocked, and there's a lot of communication that goes on. And, yeah, a lot of those people are doing the program and they post their successes, and so it's good because it acts as a way of people to become aware of our program, which is really good.
Yeah, so then I found your website, you know, I downloaded your story, and I just sat there and I just read it and sort of thought, yeah, that's ticked the boxes. I thought, oh, that's me. I mean, hadn't been through like the operations that you went through. I thought, oh, thank God that I haven't gone there.
That's right. Okay, so this is getting really interesting now. And so just before we move on, you're still on the maximum tablet dose methotrexate, sulfasalazine. You're still taking your what was it, Plaquenil, and you're also on your daily painkillers. So you're really you're medicated to the hilt, and you're looking at this Patterson program, wondering is this going to work?
Yes, and really at that stage, I thought I'd come back home to my wife, and I said, "Look, I'm going to give this a go." I said, "Look, I've got nothing. I've got absolutely nothing to lose." I said, "I'm going to do the weekend detox." So yeah, I did and we had one of those juices. It's the Breville juicer.
Like you already had one?
I already had one, which I knew it was sitting up in the back of the cupboard.
so you dusted it. There. You dusted her off.
Yeah, dusted it off and thought, "Oh, well, let's give this thing a go."
Yeah.
Yeah, got the celery and the ginger.
Yeah.
I avoided the cucumber. Cucumber always seemed to have a repetition of on my stomach.
Oh, okay. Yep.
So yeah, and on the weekend I decided to do it. On the Sunday, I said to my wife, I said, "This is working." Like I could feel a reduction in pain. Yeah, so yeah, did it the Sunday as well. Going to the toilet, I tell you what, it was a real clean out. I said to everybody, "Don't go in the bathroom."
Well, it probably smelt just as bad from all the toxins as what it did anything else. Yeah.
From then I thought, wow, like incredible.
Right. And then you moved on to the more of the baseline foods, right? After the cleanse, you started eating more of the you know, the foods from days 3 to 12, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, so, yeah, I stuck to the greens. Yeah, so virtually for that 12-day program, the pain was reducing. Like I couldn't believe it.
Okay. And then what next? Let's hear it unfold.
Yeah, so then I started doing, you know, introducing more foods. I really stuck to the celery. I sort of looked at the celery as the healing, you know, yep. Religiously, I'd have the celery every morning.
Yeah, that's cool.
So, yeah, I knew because I just knew it was doing something.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. My wife said to me, she goes, oh, how are you going to live just living on grains? She was sort of thinking, oh, what am I going to cook for you?
Yeah, yeah.
And I think I said to her at that stage, I said, look, if I've just got to drink celery juice for the rest of my life, I will.
That's right. It's easy, right, compared to all of the other options.
Yeah, and it's like that song, you know, pleasure and pain. It was an easy decision. Like, I just don't want this pain anymore.
Right. So you kept this up for a period of time. Then you've still on all these medications at this point. So talk me through the period between starting the program and your first change of medications.
Yeah, so I had I think it was about April the following year, I had an appointment with a rheumatologist. So I didn't go back to see him because the pain was just reducing from the change of diet. So I think it was about April that I had to see him from that Christmas period.
Hey, so it was about 4 months after you made these Patterson program
changes. Yeah, yep. So I probably did the wrong thing. I decided to reduce my own medication.
Oh, did you?
So by the time I saw him again, I got rid of the plaque and wall. But as you said in your program, I was also getting my blood tests done. So I went back to my GP. I asked him for the blood tests.
Awesome.
And I got the benchmarks.
So you knew that you weren't just doing things on a whim because you were looking at the bloods yourself.
Yeah.
And although it's not something that either of us recommend or say is the right thing to do, at least you knew that lowering the medications yourself, you were watching what was happening to the inflammation in your blood, so you knew that things were still under control. Okay, so you took yourself off Plaquenil.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
I told my GP that I did that.
All right, yep.
Yeah, so, and he sort of said, yeah, the inflammation markers were going down.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so when I went back to the rheumatologist, I walked into his office and he sort of said, oh, how are you, Sean? You know, I said, oh, I'm fantastic. and I said, tell me about it. I said, well, I'm on a journey. And he goes, oh, okay, tell me about this journey. So I told him. I didn't tell him that I was on your program. I told him the dietary changes that I'd made and what I was eating. And, of course, you know, same results. Well, you know, food has very little to do with to do with the disease. And anyway, he sort of looked at the bloods again and went, mm-mm. And virtually at the end of the consultation, he said, "Oh, it looks like we're on this journey together."
How about that?
Yeah,
awesome.
Okay. Yeah, and he sort of said, "Oh, well, you know," he said, "Oh, because now you've made these changes." Oh, actually, I think I did reduce the methotrexate as well. I think I dropped it down to about 20 milligrams of methotrexate. And he sort of then said, "Oh, well, let's start reducing." I think we reduced the sulfasalazine. And he said, well, let's reduce this. He said, but he sort of said, look, if you do get the pain back, well, just go back onto it.
See, I love that approach. I think that approach is fantastic because he's giving you an opportunity to lower the drugs that have the severe side effects. If you're over-medicated, we don't want to be over-medicated. And if you're not showing the inflammation, you just don't need as high a dose. And so your rheumatologist sounds exactly like mine was, and he used exactly the same approach. Look, if your blood tests are fantastic, then we can lower your medications because you do have something going on in parallel that is helping.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you went away from that feeling probably pretty good, right?
Yeah, yeah, real good, yeah. Yeah, he made another appointment. I think I also sort of had my own regime then. I thought, now by the end of the year, by the end of 2015, I'm going to be off all drugs. That's what I put in my mind. That was my goal.
Okay, so you set the goal. Yep.
I'm going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I sort of had my own little regime. I thought, you know, he might have said drop it 5 milligrams. Well, I dropped the methotrexate 10 milligrams. But I was still going back to my GP, and I was actually asking him for blood tests. So I was still monitoring it, and I was telling my GP what I was doing too. So I told him, and he sort of said, "Well, it seems to be working."
Yep, fantastic. Okay, so looking forward to hearing if you went back to the rheumatologist again. Did you go back and see him again?
Yep, saw him again.
Yep,
told him exactly what I'd done, and he sort of went, "Yeah, okay." And he sort of said, "Well, yeah, let's keep reducing it." Yeah, my appointment. So, yeah, started 2016. Yes, I was off all drugs. I saw him at the beginning of the year, and he went, "Oh, well, it looks like you're in remission." And I think my CRP, was, you know, down under one, easy.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? Well, first of all, that is absolutely just the greatest story. I mean, from the drugs you're on right down to a CRP of less than one on no drugs. That's basically, as you know, that's the holy grail of healing, isn't it? Hitting low below one on your CRP on no drugs. Did he say anything to you at that point, like, maybe you're onto something here, Sean? Maybe I should take some notes and share with everyone I know?
No. He put me in the category. He says, "You're one of a few. You're in the minority." So he sort of thought, "Well, you know, lucky you."
Lucky, yeah. It's funny that you get lucky when you put in an unbelievable amount of effort.
Yeah.
And so we're recording this. It's August 2016. So that was about 6 months ago. So you haven't been on any medications, and you've had no pain for what, 6 months?
No. Probably, actually, when I did see him in the early days, and he'd do the, you know, feeling of the feet and, you know, felt all over my body. Actually, that was the other thing too, is going back in history, probably same thing, 15 years ago, I had this nodule on my elbow.
Yeah.
I forget what the GP said. He gave me some, he said, "Oh, we'll send you for some ultrasound treatment, you know, to blast it away."
All right.
And when I did, in the early days, when the rheumatologist felt my body, he felt the lump on my elbow. And he said, "Oh, how long have you had that for?" And I said, "Oh, about 15 years ago." He goes, "Did you see the doctor?" And I said, "Yeah, I've seen about it," and told him the story. And he goes, "Well, that's one of the early signs back then, like I had it." He said, "You know, that's the typical nodule."
Wow.
Yeah. So, and he said, I told him about the gout. And he said to me, he said, "Oh, was your toes inflamed really red?" And I said, "No, they weren't." And he says, "No, you didn't have gout." The rheumatologist said that. So really, I had a period of years of misdiagnosis.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Which even makes your achievement even more substantial and significant. You know, if you've had the potential of having the disease for far longer than you actually realized, but just at a very low level for maybe those that sort of 10 to 12 years before it really started to rear its ugly head.
Yeah, so, and my last visit to the rheumatologist, he felt the nodule on my arm, and he went, and I hadn't felt it. I haven't bothered with it. And he goes, "Oh, that's reducing in size." I went, "Oh, is it?" He says, "Yeah, it's going down." So, yeah, and same thing, he felt, "Oh," at one stage I couldn't clench my fist.
Yeah.
Like I had to swing my hand, so like it was like, right, I couldn't. And shaking someone's hand, you know, you couldn't do it. I actually feared shaking people's hands because of the, you know, the squeezing of the hands. But now, like, I can do it, you know, clench my fist tight. The other thing too, the wedding ring, you know, I had to take off my wedding ring because I just couldn't put it on my fingers.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just fantastic.
Oh, mate, that's just brilliant. Yes. And so what about your family? Have they implemented into their lives any of the healthy changes that you have?
Oh, my wife gradually, like, she can see the benefits. So, yeah, she'll sort of maybe we'll eat the same food. But
Okay, that's great. But most of all, mostly you were doing a lot of it on your own.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. And now are you able to, have you reintroduced lots of foods now? Are you able to tolerate things that previously may have caused you pain?
I think with my body too is like sort of, you know, you sort of veer off track a little bit, you might try something. Thinking back, I was probably a big coffee drinker. I'd probably have, the Aldi coffee machines, the pods.
Yeah, right.
I probably was having probably about 4 pods a day.
Yep.
And actually, I thought that would have been the hardest thing to kick, but it wasn't. I just stopped it.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you mentioned that. I'm so anti-coffee. It just is one of the worst things for the body, especially if you're borderline gout. Like, you know, let's say, for instance, that it was gout, just to, help my argument here. The coffee drinking is so acidifying for the body. And, of course, gout is heavily related to the acid levels in the fluid in the body. So if you've got a chronic acidosis going on in the body, you almost certainly are either drinking a lot of alcohol or a lot of coffee. So, it's great that you stopped that. That's going to protect you indefinitely from getting gout again if you're eating the sort of things that that I always talk about and you're doing your celery juices and you're not on coffee. It's hard to get gout without having a terrible diet.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll probably think that the sugar. I mean, yeah, the sugar addiction really is probably the thing, the chocolate.
And so do you feel that you've now found your happy balance where you found a way that you can eat that you find protective and safe and healthy, and then the things that you like and you minimize them so that you know that you can stay on the road?
Yes. So I think when I do have something, and if it's wrong, I think it gives me a little, I don't get the pain, but I get, you get that twinge.
Yeah.
In the knee, you go, oh, I shouldn't have had that.
Yep.
And as you've said, is maybe the oils, which, I probably didn't fully get rid of all the oils, but I'm finding that recently, like the, you get like certain oily foods.
Absolutely. That for oily me is. Foods
give me a twinge, like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. That's going to be your number one enemy. Everyone, without exception. It's just the oils have to be completely avoided. So, I like the fact that your body responds the way it should when you've got a rheumatoid arthritis diagnosis and you eat oils, you're going to have pain. I mean, I don't know an exception to that. I've never met someone with an exception to that. So it's good, because when a body's predictable, it's improvable, if that's a word,
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's great. Well, Sean, that's a fabulous story, and, I just think that this is going to be really interesting for a lot of people to listen to. And I wonder if, did you, just before we wrap up, I want to maybe think of a few more things to ask you that people might be wondering. Did you change your exercise habits at all?
Oh, yeah, that's probably where actually, the guilt. On my way to work, I work over Grey Staines Way. And I drive, and I take, the Cumberland Highway. I don't know if you're familiar with that part of town.
I do, yeah. Coming up near Hornsby, you bend around rather than coming down the Pacific Highway.
Yeah, so West Pennant Hills, there's this place that says Bikram Yoga.
Yes.
And I drive past it, and I thought, and I'd look at it. And let's see how the diet goes first.
That's right. That's right. You'd probably heard me talking about how it's not easy. It's not easy, and it's not something that anyone looks forward to, I don't think, but it bloody gets results. We know that. So, did you do it?
No, I didn't do it. I think I was probably lucky that I had such a success with the diet. I mean, I think I would have gone to that stage, I thought, well, okay, this is now the next you know, next part of the journey, like another destination to go to.
Yeah.
And before this podcast, I was up our way. Like early on in your program, I looked for Bikram up here, up on the coast to go to, but there wasn't anything. And actually I found recently that there's one starting in Gosford.
Oh, that's great. I didn't know that.
I'm thinking about it now. I thought, well, now I've got some movement in my joints. I thought, well, I just don't want to go back to that dark place.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's great news that they've got one up there, or that, you know, so that if they have got one up there, then, yeah, go and check it out. And even if you just go once a week as almost just a sort of a maintenance thing, it's so reassuring to have a class nearby that you can go to for maintenance. I went yesterday. It's just so great just to go, and you just – it's like basically getting your body serviced from head to toe comprehensively. And it's hard, it's unpleasant, but boy, it's just like getting your body serviced. It's amazing.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I'll seriously think about giving it a go.
yeah, that's great. Because the stronger that the connective tissues are around the joints, and the better that your joints move in terms of range of motion, it improves the joint, and therefore it's less likely to become afflicted with inflammation again, because a healthy moving joint is a harder joint to pin down with inflammation. So it's a good preventative measure as well as a good restorative thing to do.
Yeah, then wouldn't mind losing a few kilos at the same time.
Yeah, it'll help with that as well.
And when I did start your program, I think I did lose about probably, 6 kilograms of weight. So
was that welcomed?
Yes, it was welcomed. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're looking great. I mean, you from the chest up that I can see on Scott, you don't need to lose anything.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. Any other tips that you thought that were a bit unique or a little strange that you found might be useful for anyone else? Or some mindset things, maybe some ways of thinking about the whole process that would help others going through it?
I can't remember where you might have mentioned it, but you sort of said about your bowel movements before going to bed, and making sure you do get that bowel movement out. I started doing that, and I think that's something. And I could have up to 3 to 4 bowel movements a day.
Yeah, which is normal, because you're meant to have a bowel movement corresponding roughly to every meal that you eat. Okay, it's like, when you see the snakes eat their large meals and you see the food moving through the snake.
Yeah.
That's the same. We've got, like, when we consume a meal, it moves through us and gets to the other end, and out we go. So there should be 3 movements a day to match each meal, and sometimes others, because sometimes we don't properly eliminate. When we go to the toilet, we're in a hurry, or we're thinking about other things or whatever. And so you kind of, it's not as clean as what it would be in theory. But what you're referring to, if people are wondering, is that there can be a situation, and I experienced it obviously because I just talk about it, is that I would find if I went to bed at night and I wasn't fully evacuated or hadn't been to the toilet, then I'd have more pain in the morning, and I was getting what I felt was this toxic reabsorption. I felt like the fecal matter in my bowels was contributing by allowing more bacteria to get back into my bloodstream because of this toxic reabsorption. And I found, as you're telling me that you found, that making sure you went to bed with empty bowels, you woke up feeling better. And I used to go to the length sometimes to ensure that by using home enema kits to totally clear out my backside before bed. And the next morning, bang, I felt great. So that's what I used to do to make sure that I'd go to bed without a full bowel.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
haven't gone to that extent.
Right, but you've had the same general feeling, which is really interesting.
Yeah, and same thing, wake up in the morning and, no stiffness.
Yeah.
Thinking back now, in the morning, it could have taken me up to 45 minutes to sort of get some movement in my body. Now I sort of can get up. I get up quite early because I commute. I'm back on track, back on routine, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Playing on that traffic on that M2 or M1.
That's right. That's right. Rush out of bed so you can sit in the car.
Yeah.
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 Okay.
That's my opportunity to listen to your podcasts.
Oh, great. Great. Yeah. Great. Anything else? Because your story's so good, I don't want to let you go just yet unless we think of anything else that might be helpful, because your results are so great. You've obviously learnt how to get this right.
Yeah, I think my body's, you know, changed from a fire alarm to a smoke alarm. Yeah, and friends would ask, like, you know, I tell friends my story and they said, oh, I can't understand, like, oh, I couldn't do it, they say. But I said, look, when you're in so much pain, I said, you can do it, because I couldn't have done it either. But, you know, it was just, you know, I had to do something.
Yeah. Well, that's a great little statement to finish on. You had to do something. And so I think that if people are listening to this on the fence, whether or not they should make the changes, yes, you have to do something. When you got to the point where you had your Baldwin Street incident and you couldn't walk up the street, the knees started, your body said, look, enough's enough. Do anything it takes, Sean. Get yourself out of this situation.
Yeah. 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 Just do it.
Yeah, just do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget about the, you know, think about the pain and the, you know, the pleasure of, you know, the pleasure of eating, you know, the eggs and bacon. And
that's right. It's that whole saying that I use a lot, which is it's the pain of discipline versus the pain of regret.
Yeah.
Because we're always going to have pain, whether it be the physical pain or the pain of discipline. And, you know, it takes effort. It takes time. It costs money to go and buy these organic sometimes foods or just buying lots of greens. It takes a lot of commitment, but, you know, with that comes results, and that's what we've got to focus on.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, it's results. Yeah, and it just shows in the blood, shows in the pain levels. Yeah, yeah, the result. Yeah, it's just, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, thanks very much for your program, because, you know, I don't know where I'd be.
Hey, you're welcome. Thanks for coming on and sharing your story with us, Sean. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, and just, yeah, your seminar that you had with Dr. Clapper, it's just an eye-opener.
Yeah.
Dr. McDougall, and, you know, things, it's sort of just a big, you know, it's just a life-changing, you know, life-changing event.
Well, you know? Yeah, that's what we feel. I mean, I feel that if I speak to enough people who've got stories like you and continue to share them with enough people, that all of us together can have a strong enough voice to be able to educate the people who are meant to be dishing out the information to help us.
Yeah, that's what they're looking at. They're looking at the results and the signs, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. That's it. Result. Nothing beats results. So, you know, I used to work in a fiber optic industry. I've got a laser physics degree. So before I got into stand-up comedy, would you believe, I was a laser physicist. And I had 100 staff working for me when I was only 24 years old in a fiber brag grading manufacturing firm here in Sydney. Our factory was opened by the then Prime Minister, John Howard. So if we were contributing so much to exports in this country, our little factory of 350 staff, we were just making a mozza as a little company here selling components to build the internet. So that's what we were doing. And my point of this was, sometimes the technical sales managers would come to me and say, why with these adjustments to these manufacturing methods, are we getting better results? Are we getting more manufacturing, more throughput and higher yield on our manufacturing? And I say, and I'd explain to them why we did it. And they said, yeah, but how's it work? I said, actually, I'm not sure, but you can't argue with the results, right? All the testing was right. You know, it complied to all the testing and everything, and just some small, we couldn't explain some things. We're talking about a nanoscopic level of measurement, but the results are there, and let's not try and work out what the atomic physics is. It just works, and so we just had to run with it. Sometimes we don't know, but you can't beat the results, and the results is all that matters. All right. I went off on a little bit of a tangent there, but thanks so much again, and let's stay in touch. Maybe maybe down the track, I'm thinking of doing some more Q&A sessions to be able to help some members, and maybe one day I might have you on to help out and answer a few questions for people who might want some help and might be wanting to ask you a few questions yourself.
Yeah, no problems, Clint. Yeah, just help. We all understand the pain, yeah, and what everyone's going through. So yeah, where I can help someone, yeah, you're just great.
Awesome. Okay, well, thanks so much, Sean.
All right. Okay, thanks very much, Clint.
You've been listening to The Pattison Program. For more information, visit pattisonprogram.com.